Everybody, welcome back to another episode of the Trap or Die podcast. This is the aftermath, man. New York Giants, Washington football aftermath. One thing I need to go ahead and set the record straight. Matter of fact, let me send this message out to people. Hold on 1 second. Where you at? Boom. All right. Let's get the administrative things out of the way. Twitch. If you're looking at Twitch, watching on Twitch, and you want to be a part of the show, each and every show, make sure you are following. This is a followers only chat. Always be a part of the conversations and things like that. So don't forget to follow if you like the content. YouTube, if you are watching on YouTube, please like, subscribe, all that stuff. You won't miss any shows. You won't miss any clips, any of that. And you also get extra content over there on the YouTube channel with analysis and other things like that. Podcast, if you are listening on the podcast, please subscribe, rate, review. Those always help out. They help out eventually. You know, right now we're still small, but we're getting up there and things like that. For those who want to call in, if you're listening live, man, 443-242-4479. I asked the question, and I'm going to answer this towards the end of this. Can Washington win consistently relying on their offense to shoulder the load for the team? That is the question I'm asking everybody, and that's the question I'm going to ask myself as well. DJ Molly Maul on Trap or Dive podcast, you know what I'm saying? We ain't copying, you know what I'm saying? For legal reasons, we ain't going to mention the artist and and his famous album, you know what I'm saying? We ain't about to mention that. All that's done. The number is there. Let me put the number in the chat, too. Hold on 1 second. Boom. Number is right there in the chat for you all. All right. With that being said, this is a short stream. It's not going to take that long to cover everything and give the updates and things like that. Just to close the book on some things on my end. And for the rest of the week, too, by the way, the schedule is as follows. Tuesday, we have Manny Benton, a returning guest on the show. He's going to chop it up with the Trap or Die podcast for tomorrow's show. And then Thursday, we're previewing the Buffalo. I mean, we're here Wednesday. I don't want to overlook all 32, but all 32 is just the fellas, no guests. And then Thursday, we have the guest, Bruce Nolan of the Buffalo Bills, who covers them. He'll be hopping on Thursday to preview some Washington football and Buffalo Bills action on Sunday. All right. With that being said, there's a few places or few areas that I can begin with, but I guess, matter of fact, I'm going to just kick it off with this. So, after the game, matter of fact, the post-game show, we allow callers to call in. We give our immediate analysis for the games and things like that. One caller called in and said he was, to sum it up, he didn't say everything verbatim that I'm about to repeat, but he just said he was a little disappointed in Chase Young, man. At the number two overall pick, you would imagine that number two overall pick wouldn't leave question marks as to how he's performing on the field. It would just be clear cut. He's making an impact or he's not making an impact. And we can't really tell what Chase Young is doing on the field. That was a synopsis of what he was saying. And I understand where he's coming from. Oh, all right. Look, we got a call in right now. So I'm going to finish my thought. But before we finish the thought, I'm going to turn to the caller and we can go ahead and get this thing going. Thing ringing loud as shit. Hello, who's this?
This yeah boy.
Oh Lord. Hey, what up, Sleezo?
What up, boy? I just want to give everybody love, man. Just let everybody know that this stream is the best stream on Twitch, man. That's all, man.
I appreciate it, bro.
Doing your thing, brother.
Hey, look, I appreciate it, bro. You know what I'm saying? Like I say, always don't hesitate. You ain't got to wait till we talk about the Eagles in the NFL to call in. You know what I'm saying? You can always call in whenever them lines open, my brother, like you're doing now, by the way.
I got you, brother.
Like you're doing
now. I got you. Will do, bro.
Hey, appreciate the support, my man. How you? Well, before you get off, let's get some. I'll ask you one question about the Eagles before we finish this Washington stream. What was your thoughts on the game, man, and how everything was taken care of on Sunday?
It's week two, man. It's too early for me to sit here and burn a ship, bro. Like a lot of Eagles fans and like a lot of people are doing. It's still early, bro. It's just, a lot of people ain't even played in preseason. Still, I think about it, like we only had 3 preseason games, so it's like. There's not much to go off of for real. So they look the best, but I still think, you know what I'm saying, they still got an opportunity to do all right.
Okay. All right. We'll talk about it more on Wednesday, man. If you happen to be around, we'll definitely get some more conversation going. Always appreciate you checking in, Steezo. You hopped on the 6 today?
No, I'm going to get on, though. I'm going to be on it a little bit.
All right, bro. Well, Monday Night Football, so actually, no.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that.
I will hit you up. I'll hit phones tomorrow.
Say less. That's a bit, bro.
All right, boy, I'll holler at you. All right. Let me go back to here. There we go. So, what's going on, T? I hope all is well with you. I hope your weekend was good, you know. It was a good little Sunday. We didn't have to worry about the Washington football team and us getting stretched out by anything that they had going on. We could just relax, watch the games, you know, all those type of things, and just enjoy a full day of football or do some errands. You know what I'm saying? The people want to take care of some things when Washington ain't playing. But back to this topic. Like he basically said. The guy was like, if you don't want to have question marks about your number 2 overall pick, I'm not saying that the guy's a bust, not saying the guy's bad. He didn't even say that the guy was playing bad. He just said there shouldn't be instances in which Chase Young isn't showing up on the stat sheet. He isn't getting the sacks or the pressures or the hurries and things like that. So that was kind of bothering him. And it was a valid point to the point where it's a legitimate question to ask. And I think the best thing with the Trap or Die podcast, and I said this to a commenter, and this is where I'm getting at. Like, the best thing about the platform is that I provide people a place where we welcome the challenging conversations, and we don't back down from having those conversations. And I think people hear this thing about Chase Young and think that we're all ragging on Chase Young because he's playing terribly. That's not the case. Chase Young is still making an impact in the run game, and he's had a couple of pressures against the New York Giants. The issue is expectations. Expectations are high for a number two overall pick for a reason, and you cannot stop that. Like, everybody's going to have those expectations. It's up to the player to meet them, and you can't sit here and make excuses for a guy who was drafted number 2 overall. He's touted as a generational talent. Things like that, you have to understand that the expectations are going to be high. The question is, can he meet those expectations? That's where you're at. It's okay to criticize as these things come along. And I think the thing is with Chase Young, he's in a position as a player where he has to handle those. He has to understand he has that and then eliminate the doubt, eliminate the questions, things like that. So to the point in which that this guy said, somebody commented on the segment that I posted. Oh, we got another call. One of these days, I'm going to get this point across. But we will circle back. We will circle back to this one. Hold on 1 second. I know who this is. Before the record, who the hell is this? And welcome to the Trap or Die Podcast. Who's calling?
You be
questioning.
I'm reporting live with the baby in my hand. I couldn't wait to call this week, and I definitely want to weigh in on the topic that y'all speaking on right now in regards to Chase. Okay. I want to talk about 2 things first off. I want to talk about the game first and foremost. I got to weigh in on number 4. He showed his ass, and like your man said that previously called, is week 2. You know what I mean? We don't know. But in regards to Chase Young, I'm going to touch on Heineke later. In regards to Chase Young, dude's presence is an impact. You know what I'm saying? Like, when he's on the field, they got to account for 99. You got to double team 99. You got to make sure. That's what he brings as the number 2 overall pick. He's not going to always have 2 sacks a game. He's not going to always be a game wrecker. We don't know exactly what his assignment is on each and every play. They may be setting him up to get more sacks later on in the season,
But as you mentioned already, if you watch that game, I was finally able to watch the game in detail Thursday night. I wasn't as busted as I was on Sunday. Dude had an impact on that game. Now, our defense as a whole isn't clicking right now. So, you know what I mean? Of course, like you said, the expectations, you know what I mean? That comes with being a number two overall pick. We want relax, people. It's coming. It's week two. You know, it's coming. And he does. He is impacting the game in other ways. And that's all you can ask for from him. Like you said, expectations. We got to learn to temper our expectations because the same thing happened with Heineke this week. Now, you know what people are expecting of him next week? 300 yards, two touchdowns, scrambling with his leg. Well, it's a week-to-week league. Everybody isn't going to blow up every – it is week two. It is week two.
So while we're here, let's go ahead and close this Chase Young thing so I don't have to keep taking calls and my point getting interrupted. Let's talk about it right quick. So the point to wrap up the situation with the YouTuber who left the comment. So the guy basically said the person who called in mentioned TJ Watt, Joey Bosa, Nick Bosa, and Chandler Jones as people who came in early on in their years, and they were not, like, you knew off rips they were making impacts. You could see it with your eyes that they were making impacts on the game. Now, he wasn't saying that Chase Young wasn't doing it. He was just saying he was hoping that it wouldn't be the question marks where we're like, is he or isn't he? We know that Chase Young has had those moments, but the guy who commented said that, dude, you really don't know football. It's the beginning of his second year, and you name these other guys. Look at their first 3 years. None of them were like who they are now. You build up to greatness. No, but here's the thing, though. He's wrong. There's two things that he's wrong about, and that's where I was getting at. While he mentions that they aren't where they are now, that part is correct. However, you look at Nick Bosa's first year. He came in the league, made an impact off rip. One interception, nine sacks, 47 total tackle, 25 QB hits. He was all over the field. That's Nick Bosa. Joey Bosa, first year. I got to finish the stats. So Joey Bosa, his brother, came in the league, only played 11 games, or excuse me, played 12 games, had 10 and a half sacks, 21 quarterback hits, 41 total tackles. That's for year one, and then he ascended from there. Chandler Jones, like I said, excluding Chandler Jones because he wasn't really that impact guy year one, but he had six sacks, 45 total combined tackles, 12 quarterback hits. Again, he wasn't one where, like, whoever called in and mentioned Chandler Jones was incorrect. But then you go to TJ Watt, who had seven sacks his first year, 54 total tackles, 13 QB hits, ascended from 7 to 13 to 14 and a half to 15 sacks. And then lastly, we talk about Chase Young, who had 7.5 sacks, 57 tackles, 12 quarterback hits in his rookie year. And that's where we are now because he's in his second year going into game three. So to the commenter's point who said that these guys aren't who they were now, back then, correct. But at the same time, they came into the league well more a formidable defender than he's projecting. So, yes, if you're making the comparisons where you're hoping that Chase Young was this guy, like the names that he mentioned, I understand your point because these guys came in and did much better statistically than Chase Young did. Most of these guys, I'm not going to give them credit for everybody. Most of these guys came in and did much better statistically and productivity-wise than Chase Young did his rookie year, now heading into his second year, his third game. That's all I was getting off.
Sack numbers are very misleading. Let me ask you this, and you know football. I talk to you all the time. You think Chase Young left questions last year as to whether or not he was worth that second overall pick? You think he left questions?
Well, he didn't leave questions. I did a bad job of the question marks is like impact. You know what? I'll just leave it at that because I'm not even gonna speak for guy. I'm gonna just say he did mention question marks.
Last year we seen him have that game that said
I'm not even gonna speak for guy.
We've seen him make plays. You can watch the top 100 where he was. They show all his highlights. Dude had so many impactful plays last year that won us games. He was one of the primary reasons our defense made that jump last year from being this is a talented defense to no, now this is a productive defense, along with Del Rio, of course. Chase Young was a big reason for that. Also, a lot of those guys you named, they don't have other pass rushers on the opposite side of them, which sometimes can benefit a guy like Chase Young. But other times, dude, you got somebody getting there a second and a half before you in Montez Sweat. You got interior pressure from guys like John Allen and De'Ron Payne and Matt Ioannidis. Dude, like, again, we got pressure on the Giants the other night, but Chase Young was a second and a half a step away from a sack that Montez Sweat ended up getting. You know what I mean? So his impact on the game is evident to me. I'm not questioning it. Again, it's week two. He'll have his games where he shows up the same way John Allen will. And guys mentioned guys like Chandler Jones and T.J. Watt. Believe it or not, when we talk about edge rushers, a lot of times they probably have six games where they really rack up on sacks. And the rest of the game, they don't really get sacks. But they impact the games other ways, unless you're Aaron Donald, where it seems like you're getting a sack every game, or Khalil Mack in his prime. Khalil Mack last year only had like eight sacks. But you can't tell me Khalil Mack isn't an impact player. A lot of times people look at the sack numbers and they don't recognize, like, dude, this dude being on the field is a problem. He is worth that number two overall pick. And I think people have to look at the game more in detail. And a lot of times as fans, especially fans of our own team, we're overly critical. I've seen people do it with Landon Collins. Like, dude, he doesn't play that bad. But people try to make it seem like he's the worst acquisition we ever made. They used to do it with Norman.
Of course.
But it's like,
and when somebody's a scapegoat, it is who it is.
Yeah, it's like these dudes make plays, but I get it. You paid Landon Collins that high money deal, so people are saying, hey, look, he's not living up to the deal. But because someone isn't living up to the deal, it doesn't mean they aren't playing good football. And I think we got to stop doing that as fans. We do that so often. And
so before we get to Heineke,
I gotta talk about Heineke.
I'm about to say, before you get to Heineke, so here's one thing that I want to be cautious of. Just from a standpoint of people who watch Washington football and who's a fan of the team, I completely agree that sack numbers are misleading. They don't necessarily tell the whole story, because somebody who got a sack could have benefited from a person who created pressure. Now, that's just an example of how somebody else can get a sack number and his numbers will look good, right? But here's I don't want people, because it's not just you, right? It's people who do it on Twitter. So this isn't like coming directly at you. This is for a lot of people who say these things, including myself. But I don't want people to get bogged down in, when you're talking about one player, our favorite player at that, I don't want them to get bogged down in the regurgitated excuses about what these sack numbers could look like if he didn't create pressure and somebody else didn't clean up the sack. Because we can't say for certain two things. We can't say for certain without all of us looking at the film like as much as they do, how many sacks that actually Chase Young calls for somebody else. We can't quantify that number. And then that's the first thing. The second thing is, when we're talking about keeping the expectations high for a player, even with what you're saying is being true, I want you to know, this, you as in the people who are listening, I want you to know, these guys who he mentioned, but not only some the guys that he didn't mention, Khalil Mack, like my boy Montel just mentioned, and then some other people that we haven't talked about, Von Miller, they're still getting double-digit sacks. They're still getting 15-plus sacks. They're still getting these high amount of sacks, and that has to be taken into perspective too. They still get the same amount of attention as Chase Young going to get. They still get that attention. And they're still finding a way to get to the quarterback. So I just want y'all to keep that in mind when you're talking about these things. While it may be true that somebody's getting double teamed or somebody's getting chipped, things like that, you have to take into account that people find ways. This could be a coordinator thing too, trying to find a way to scheme him to get like those one-on-one matchups against an offensive tackle or a tight end or something like that, or even an interior guard. You have to take into account the work that Chase Young is doing as well. Now, that's all I'm getting at. I agree with what Montel is saying. I agree with what the fans say about these double teams and chips. But you cannot solely rely on that when we're talking about what is or what isn't Chase Young's production.
Last point before we move on, because I do agree with, I want to see more sacks, goddamn. I'm not saying I don't. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I got you.
I
want to
see some more fucking sacks. I'm sorry.
Hey, look, it's my show, bro. You good. Go ahead. So, this ain't radio.
I ain't saying I don't want to see more sacks. I'm just saying there are so many different factors. And if we're if we're just basing his game primarily off sacks, I think that can be somewhat misleading if that's what you do. And I'm glad you mentioned
yeah.
the scheme. And one of the things I noticed is during our first drive from the Chargers game as well as the Giants game, we come out and it's real basic. It's real like, and I told my dad, if I'm playing Madden, I could pick that defense apart because they come out and it's just base. There's no disguise. There's no linebackers on the line. So it's easy for coordinators to say, hey, we're going to chip Chase Young with this guy and had a guard chip because there's no disguise. There's no linebacker. There's no corner. As you've seen in the second half and in the second quarter, when they started to mix up looks and they started to bring corners up, they sent Fuller on a corner blitz. They had linebackers on the line. It makes it hard for the O-line to identify, okay, can we chip Chase Young this play? So there are things that the coordinator could do to assist Chase Young with those double teams, move him around a little bit more. You know what I mean? Have somebody on his side that look like they come in, so that way you get him one-on-one, and that person could just drop off the same way. Who was the linebacker from the Bears who faked out Brandon Scherff? Oh my gosh! And ran and got a sack, ran right by him. We got to do things like that as well on defense. But I'm gonna leave it at that because I do think his production needs to be a little bit better. But I'm also giving him a little bit of benefit of the doubt because he is still productive.
Yeah.
And he is it's week two in year two. So I'm not gonna really be as critical as some others. Not saying that you are, but some others, you know.
But yeah, already. What's going on with Taylor, man?
As far as the game, I already mentioned the defense, we gotta stop coming out based like that. I think Jack Del Rio is one of those coordinators where he likes to see what the offense is going to present to him. So he just comes out base and he kind of just like, but in a sense is letting them punch you in the mouth. He's like, I just hope my defense makes a play. Let's get off the field because I trust my front four. But as we've seen, that front four ain't always, you know what I'm saying? At least they don't always come out strong. And honestly, if we talking about Chase Young, I got to talk about the rest of the guys too. They haven't lived up to the hype of those names that's on that front line. And that's not something that a lot of people talk about.
Excluding Allen. That's it. Excluding Allen. Allen been hoping.
I couldn't analyze Allen the first game. I was too drunk. The last time, Thursday night, I was able to watch it in detail. Allen definitely got off Thursday night. And you know what? I don't know if you remember. I said I wish we didn't sign him to that big deal. I'd have rather sign somebody else. I was wrong. I was definitely wrong, just from what I can see. But the superstar tonight was number four. And I think if he continues to answer questions, we gotta kind of get rid of that doubt in the back of our mind. He hasn't done anything but made plays and go out there and play hard. It's the replays I watch, and your man's face just look like, God damn it, I'm gonna give it my all. And I can't help but fuck with that. You know what I'm saying? Like, you out there, you going so hard, you falling to the floor just trying to make plays to prove a point. And I've never seen that from any of our quarterbacks in the past. You know what I'm saying? So I can't keep going. Number four, Taylor Heineke, he go out there, he plays hard out. You can see it in his face. He's playing with everything he has, with every inch he has. And I just respect that. Even I don't think he's the most talented. I don't think he has the strongest arm. I think passes float high. I think he can, you know, he can be prone to turnovers. But from what I've seen so far, I ain't got no choice to believe in him as the quarterback because that's all he showed me. Until he showed me something different, if he was a number three, if he was a third overall pick or he was number one overall pick, we'd be screaming, you know, let's go with Taylor Heineke.
Yeah,
but
for
because
sure.
He's an undrafted free agent, yeah, everybody keeps doubting him. And it's like, dog, he's done nothing but prove us all wrong. So why don't we just go in this direction and say, hey, this is the guy.
So I'm going to ask you this this question right quick. Projecting, obviously, starting from the Giants game up until the rest of the season, or at least 8 weeks, for however much time we're expecting Heineke to formally be the starter, and then, you know, they'll reevaluate down the road. But my question is, can this team rely on the offense? Can this team win games primarily relying on the offense to shoulder the load moving forward? So I'm going to leave that question open-ended, and I'll give it to you to answer.
For sure, but I'll say this. I don't think that we should be trying to rely on the offense at this point. I think you've built your team to be a good defensive team, to get after the quarterback. You got secondary players now. And I think you also built this team to run the ball. And I didn't think Antonio Gibson got enough carries either on Thursday night. And I think that's what you need to be trying to do. And you need to be playing play action, trying to get 17 the ball. I think that's – and I honestly think that's what fits Heinicke best. A balanced offense with his skill set, you can use his legs. I didn't think Scott Turner called a great game, if I'm being honest. But, again, I don't think you should be trying to rely on your offense. I think you should rely on the strength of your team where the most talent is, and that's that D-line and that defense. Now, can we? I don't know. I'm not going to sit here and say yeah right now, because even though I don't want us to keep doubting for it, he still got to show us some more. You know what I mean? I'm definitely realistic. It was a good win, but that defense got to get better.
Ooh, that's a whole show within itself, bro. That damn defense. Oh my goodness. But yeah, hey, look, man, I don't disagree with you what you're saying, man. And I think the offense is in a position where, like, without giving my full answer away, the offense is in a position where if they can be consistent in the ground game, just obviously moving and getting the yards per carry. You know, we can kind of see something, at least the offense, put up some points, or at least keep the ball in their possession. We'll just keep it that way. Cause they haven't really, well, it's only been two games, so I'm not going to speak too much in terms of absolutes. So I'll just leave it at that. Okay. All right. So quick thing before you get off here, man, win or lose in Buffalo, is this going to be a good game?
I ain't gonna lie. This is my fandom showing. But I do think that what's the spread? I know you know.
The spread right now, I believe, is at. Let me go to week three. Currently 9 points.
Damn,
we're 9-point underdogs. Yeah, man, and Buffalo. Mm-hmm. It started at 10.
I honestly think we match up well with Buffalo. I think Buffalo doesn't run the ball that well. And I think in order to beat Washington, typically in the past, you had to be able to run the ball. Now, this year, we allowed the freaking Chargers to beat us without running. And the Giants, we let Daniel Jones get off. But I'm going to go with the strength of my team steps up this week. And again, this is my fandom talking. I think William Jackson steps up, Fuller steps up. You see Chase Young have a big game. And I think we can run the ball on them just a little bit. And I think Heinicke makes some plays. Now, they shut out the Dolphins, but it was just a bad week for the Dolphins. I think they kind of sleep on us.
I agree.
Yeah, we had an extended week. And they, you know what I mean, they coming off a big win. They might come in there yawning a little bit. We're going to catch them off guard.
All right. Okay, so, I mean, you did everything to say a dub or a loss, but, you know, I get where you're going. I catch you drifting.
We winning that thing.
All right, Diego, it's on record. We winning that thing. All right, then, man. I'm gonna check in with you come Sunday and see where your head at after this game is over. I don't doubt we have a we don't have a chance. I mean, we have a chance to win. I think we're here. I think we're there. So, you know, it is what it is. All right, man.
All right, I'm
going to catch you. Hey, you be safe, bro. I'm going to holler at you, boy.
All right.
Oh, man. Okay. Good point. We can cover. What's going on? Hey, first off, Sleazo, stop disrespecting us. Stop. We're not bringing back Haynesworth. Okay. Amani, we can cover, but not win, in my opinion. Hey, look. 9 points is a lot. I would take that too. I was definitely gonna take the 10 until that line dropped. I hope all is well with you, Amani, man. And I hope you had a good weekend and all that good stuff. All right, so let's close up on some things, man. Like I said, this wasn't gonna be the long stream. We're just gonna cover up some things from the Washington game, man. So I got my point across with the Chase Young thing, and just to close the book on that one right quick, most pass rush wins in week two per ESPN's Next Gen stats. Von Miller with 8. Micah Parsons with 7 for the Dallas Cowboys. And then Chase Young with 7. Pass rush win rates or wins are just indicative of the one-on-one matchups and beating your the one-on-one, the offensive lineman, the tackle, or the guard, or the center in front of you. So Chase Young was among the best in his win rates, as he should be. And that is more context for Sunday's game to help those out that was interested in the conversation about Chase Young. Again, we don't back down from challenging conversations here. Whether or not you disagree with it, or it's like this is all doom and gloom, or this is negativity or pessimistic, guess what? We talk about everything here, and that's one topic that's that should be addressed, whether or not you disagree or agree. It doesn't matter in terms of the topic. You know what I'm saying? It is what we're gonna talk about. All right, where are we at? Some more things. Let's close up with some good things, and then a few question marks as we move over into Buffalo. Notable Washington grades from Pro Football Focus again through week two. This is from PFF Nick Akridge, which he was a guest on the show as well at one point. Sam Cosby's 90.2 run block grade is the third highest among tackles. Jonathan Allen's 90.5 pass rush grade is the third highest among interior defensive line. Deron Payne's 80.5 run defense grade is fourth highest among interior defensive line. Cosme, which we kind of figured would be a mauler in the run game, who had issues in pass protection and kind of didn't really understand, you know, or he had some things to learn as a pass blocker. He's pretty stout in the run game, and we know we could trust him in that aspect. He's also been a key reason for why Antonio Gibson has been successful as a rusher. But secondly, the defensive line, man, the front seven in general has had their issues collectively, just understanding what they needed to do on a play-by-play basis, understanding their assignments and just doing their jobs. But at the same time, you do have these individuals who now this is an analytical standpoint and people who it should be used as a resource and not gospel. But this is just to provide some objectivity in the sense that Jonathan Allen and DeBron Payne are among some who are actually, you know, while individuals are kind of not playing an individual game isn't beneficial to the team, but these guys within the scheme and within the defense are having really good outings, and that's Jonathan Allen, obviously, and then DeRon Payne. So it's good to see people among the defensive line that are actually standing out. On top of what we just mentioned with Chase Young, him actually winning his pass rush one-on-ones last week seven times, which was tied for second highest in the NFL of week two so far. I mean, because we do got a Monday night game tonight, right? Okay. Second thing is Heinicke and Terry McLaurin and Scott Turner. Now, to what degree Scott Turner, let me not disrespect Scott. Scott played he had a really interesting game plan in the sense that he used Terry McLaurin all over the field. Played at the X, ran some plays at the slot position. He ran a variety of routes, comebacks, pivots, post. Excuse me. I think I saw a couple slants here and there, and then crossers across the middle. A lot of things worked out in Terry's advantage. I mean Terry's standpoint, and the quarterback saw him. And I think that's a combination of what Scott wants to do, but also the fact that Heinicke is very aware of who his playmakers are. He targeted a lot of Logan Thomas. He targeted a lot of Terry McLaurin. Terry McLaurin had, I think, like 13 targets and 11 catches. And then J.D. McKissic is another guy, another option who's very versatile as a player. But he's using him, Scott Turner and Heinicke, excuse me. They're using him as the X factor that he should be in terms of being able to run and pass the ball. I think that second quarter drive where it was like 4 minutes left and they drove down the field to score the touchdown with under 30 seconds to play in the second half. That was all J.D. McKissic. That was all Adam Humphries. Like, that's really what it was. I mean, Logan Thomas made the big catch over the seam for like 20-something yards over the middle, and that was incredible. So I think what we're starting to see here, everybody, is the fact that at least for this game, Scott Turner understanding how to attack a defense and understanding where the voids are for that defense. The Giants weren't really that good as a linebacker pass coverage. If you could get behind the linebackers, you're deemed to be successful. And they weren't really playing the flats. They really didn't respect it. And Heinicke was smart enough to understand where his checkdowns were, Adam Humphries being one of them, pretty often. He ended up with like 7 catches. Checkdowns and bubble screens and understanding that the Giants weren't really playing the flats and they weren't playing that close to the line of scrimmage. So there were opportunities up there. So for Heinicke and Scott Turner to utilize their starters and their key playmakers is a really good thing moving forward, as opposed to just finding somebody who gets open or just finding things within the flow of the offense. No, you find ways to focus or make these playmakers a focal point in your offense. And that's something that they displayed against the New York Giants this past Thursday. Another note. For the offense is that there were only 13 carries for Antonio Gibson. And I think while, like the caller just mentioned, he said he wanted to see Antonio run the ball a little bit more. And while I agree with that, I wasn't really, looking back at the game, I wasn't really too upset in how they handled it. At one point in the third quarter, Taylor Heinicke was 20 of 25 as a passer. Only 5 incompletions in the late third quarter. And at that point, I think he had 9 or 10 straight completions as well. So I think Scott Turner recognized that as a coordinator and a play caller, understanding that Heinicke was the person that was moving the ball. And while you can run when you wanted to against this New York Giants, you could have had more carries. I think they understood, again, understanding the flats and attacking the defense at the line of scrimmage with the quick passing game was also beneficial to this offense. So, yes, 13 carries don't look good, but at the same time, you're still in that position where you didn't have to force any runs. The only question, and we all know this at this point now because the game is over, right? The only question is when you're running it within the 4-minute drill. Why are you forcing that pass for Heinicke? Now, the play call was the issue to begin with. But make no mistake, Heinicke was the one who compiled a bad play call into a terrible decision as a passer. And people want to, you know, absolve him because the play call, and while I agree that the play call was terrible, that does not excuse him for the decision that he made as a passer. That's not how it works. It was a bad call, and then the passer made an even terrible decision, a worser decision, if that's a word, a worser. All right, so again, AG could have ran more, but at the same time, the offense was in rhythm, and they used the short passing game as an extension of the run game, and it worked out well. So if you want to extrapolate the passing yards that were like one at the line of scrimmage or 1 yard beyond the line of scrimmage, put that towards the run stats and leave it there. Jonathan Allen has earned his paycheck. That's the defensive side of the ball. We know that he's having his pressures. He's wreaking games up front. Now, there is a case to be made that this was against the New York Giants, but at the end of the day, we all said heading into the week that this defensive line needs to dominate against the Giants, a Giants offense who were banged up at the offensive line position. That's exactly what Jonathan Allen did. So he'll have another test against the Buffalo Bills to see where he's at against a more healthy offensive line, a more stable offensive line. As well as the rest of the defensive line, you know, who had a whole bunch of pressures and hurries and sacks against Daniel Jones this past week. You'll see where they're at. And lastly with the good is Cam Curl. Cam Curl's going to – he played a spy role that I noticed late in the game. I don't know how many times he actually did it, but late in the game in the fourth quarter, Cam Curl, he had moments in which he was playing a spy against Daniel Jones in key situations. One of the last drives I think that led to a field goal, I believe. Cam Curl ended up running a QB spy role on a 3rd and 7. And while there was pressure on Daniel Jones and it forced him to throw a wild pass and that ended up being incomplete, even with him escaping the pocket and having the pressure barreling down, if he did escape the pocket and there was no pressure or he had room to run, it didn't matter because Cam Curl pulled up at the right time and would have negated any attempt beyond the line of scrimmage or further past the line of scrimmage to even make a run for a first down. It wouldn't have happened. I think that's important to note because Josh Allen is in the same realm as a scrambler, if not even more dangerous a person who he's quicker and he's bigger than Daniel Jones. The Spyro is going to be essential again, and I don't think you need to wait until the second half or fourth quarter to roll out that that Spyro. I think it needs to be something where you're utilizing this from the jump, because you don't want to allow the quarterback to make plays with his legs and extend plays with his legs when you could have been negating that from the get-go. So I think that Spyro fits well for whoever on this defense, whether it's Cam Curl, Landon Collins, or even a linebacker in Cole Holcomb or John Bostic. John Bostic. I don't know. But you get the point, right? We're not talking like you need a quarterback Spyro, and I think that's going to be efficient for one aspect, excuse me, of stopping Josh Allen and the Buffalo Bills. At the end of the day, the Buffalo Bills, it all goes through him. If you can negate Josh Allen, you can negate this offense. You can keep yourself in the game, because if he can extend plays and become a factor in the run game, you're looking at a situation where you're having 100 yards given up against Josh Allen by himself, and that's an issue. All right. Closing things up on the bed to continue this conversation with quarterback keepers. Washington could not stop the Jones keepers on the read options, man, and it might be a problem in Buffalo. Here's the timeline of events. When I took my notes, on the game, my timeline of events and tracking this thing was crazy. The first, it started with just the linebackers. The linebackers are getting killed repeatedly on the same keeper. Then the second thing I said was, is Cole Holcomb being picked on in this read option stuff? And then Daniel Jones breaks off for a 50-yarder. And Landon Collins was the edge rusher or the edge defender on that one. And he got faked out and he crashed hard. And then it turned out to be after that, everybody keeps crashing. I think it was Chase Young at one point or James Smith Williams, where I was like, bruh, there is no reason on earth that you all, everybody, every single person that lines up on the edge for this read option defense and read option look, that everybody's biting on the running back. Again, Josh Allen will create these problems, and I think they're smart enough in Buffalo where they can see what happened against the New York Giants, and they'll test Washington. I'm not going to sit here and say that Washington won't be prepared for it, but they'll test Washington. They will make sure that they get Josh Allen and some looks to have a run pass option for that offense and see how Washington handles it. How are they going to handle it? Everybody was getting cooked, whether it was the defensive linemen, the edge rushers, the linebackers, or the safeties. Everybody was crashing and they could not stop Daniel Jones. That was a huge problem. You only hope for the best moving forward, but at the same time, Buffalo will test these guys and they have the quarterback to do it. It's not like a situation where you're playing a Tom Brady or a Jameis Winston, or even a Matt Ryan. Jameis Winston is a little bit more mobile, but Matt Ryan and I would say Aaron Rodgers too. Like, these guys aren't that mobile, but you have Josh Allen and Daniel Jones back-to-back weeks. You're going to get tested, and Buffalo will be fools not to run the read option and see how disciplined Washington is. All right. Last thing. Heinicke balled out. He balled out Thursday. He was poised, made a lot of plays within the pocket. He knew where he wanted to go with the football. They weren't always accurate, and that is a problem that you can kind of keep in the back of your head. And he's in a situation where now he has at least seven games left, where he has to kind of show Ron Rivera something, but also prove himself something, that he is the starter. Like, he said after the game that he felt like he's earned the starting role. That's kind of premature, but I mean, why wouldn't you say yes if you're in that position? It's just the fact that now that you've been asked that question and you answered it as honest as you could, can you back it up? This is the first game where Heinicke is playing on the road as a Washington football player. He's played every single game for Washington at home: Carolina, Tampa Bay, Chargers, Giants. Everything's been at home. And not only that, the three games that you played last, or the two games that you played last year, weren't in front of any crowds. So now you got the home crowd on your first two games in 2021. You're going on the road against Buffalo in a hostile environment, a respectable environment, and you're going to have to deal with the elements of a fan base who is really, really geeked up about a Buffalo Bills team who has Super Bowl aspirations. And how do you handle that from a team whose defense just pissed a shutout, and then their offense who is a sleeping giant? They are good. They may have not been looking good right now from the first two games, but trust me, they are good. They are good. So can this offense really shoulder the load and win games for this team? I don't think so. I don't think so, man. Now we are missing Curtis Samuel, and that's a big piece to this team. But at the same time, when you're looking at explosiveness and people who are consistently making plays for this team, I'm not sitting here saying it doesn't exist. But you're going to go up against teams who can compete and who can score at will against other defenses. And the way that this defense has been playing, you can't necessarily say with full confidence that they can keep the better teams out of the end zone. I know the schedule too. This is a crazy thing, but I'm going to look at it, pull it up again. The Buffalo Bills is a really good scoring offense. Kansas City Chiefs, good scoring offense. Green Bay Packers, good scoring offense. Tampa Bay Buccaneers, good scoring offense. Those are four games out of the next 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Four out of the next seven where you're facing top-tier offenses. Carolina Panthers is right after the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and they look good right now. The issue right here is all about, can you keep up with some of these offenses? Again, you have three other games where you can probably manage because their offense, the opposing team's offense, Atlanta Falcons, New Orleans Saints, and Denver Broncos, their offenses aren't necessarily that dangerous. But I don't know. You have to be able to show that you can pass and be and have explosive plays. To an extent, they've been able to do that two games in. But at the same time, it's been weird. You're talking about a team who has failed to stay on the field offensively on third downs. I think, let me look at their first two games. The first game against the Chargers, you're looking at a team who, let's see. I should have had these numbers up earlier. Conversions. There we go. 3 of 10, 30% against the Chargers. And then the New York Giants was 4 of 13 against the Giants. So, 30% against the Giants. My point behind this is if you're trying to extend drives, you're trying to keep this defense who is so surprisingly bad to start, they're not doing too good. If you're trying to keep these guys off the field, you're not doing a good job of staying on the field from an offensive perspective. And until they can really turn the corner in terms of being a more efficient third down team and actually scoring points early and often, you can't necessarily say that this offense is shoulder to load. And that's a little broad perspective of where I'm at with it. But at the same time, you just got to understand, like, this offense is going to need Washington's defense help. Like, it's going to need the help. I don't see them winning many games if you have to rely on this offense to put up 25 plus points per game. That's not ideal for this team. You need this defense to kind of to limit Washington opponent's opportunities to score. And you can't just keep allowing red zone opportunities for these teams, man. It's not good. It's not good. So I'm not necessarily in that same boat as the caller who mentioned that this offense is as productive or could be as productive. Even with having to shoulder the load, man, I'm not there. Unfortunately, I'm not there yet. So yeah. Okay. Let me make sure I cleaned up everything. Yeah, that's it. That's it. Jamin Davis. Shout out to him. That's a brief mention, man. He apparently did pretty good in the week one, according to people who covered him or at least looked at the tape. They said he did pretty good. Worth noting though. After or week one, he played 56% of snaps. Week two, he only played 39% of snaps. So he played good in a more limited role for this defense, which is kind of, you know, you take that for what it's worth. I guess we all take that for what it's worth, man. You don't necessarily want to see a person whose snaps are decreasing or fluctuating from a week-to-week basis. You want to see them up in that 90%, 100% range, like Cole Holcomb, who's been playing 100% of the snaps the past both weeks, matter of fact. So, obviously, they have a role carved out for Cole Holcomb, and that's that. So, you kind of want to see Jamin build his way up to a more consistent presence on the field, and right now he's just not there yet. But he played okay in the game against the Giants, and that's pretty good for him. All right, that's it. Hey, I appreciate everybody who watched live. I appreciate everybody who tuned in on YouTube or listening on the podcast, man. Appreciate everybody who called in, all that good stuff. Again, if you're if you're watching on Twitch and if you like the content, go ahead and follow. This is a followers only chat. You can always be a part of the show and give your thoughts and stuff on the team. If you're looking on YouTube, please rate, subscribe. We would appreciate you watching too. Like and subscribe and all that good stuff. And then iTunes or anywhere you're listening to your podcast, just give it a rating and a review, man. We would appreciate the help. All that good stuff. You can find me on Twitter at LetMaulTellIt. And yeah, tomorrow I'll be back with the full crew. And Manny Benton will be joining us as well to recap Washington and preview Washington moving forward with the Buffalo Bills this upcoming Sunday. So back tomorrow. We'll go from there. Appreciate everybody for watching, all that good stuff. Peace.